What if the bike doesn't just have a motor in it, but also has like some sort of AI and a radio on it, and he wasn't talking to Van Aert, he was talking to the bike?
Alexa, go faster.
This is the 4D chess that Jumbo are playing at this point in time, and the rest of us just cannot keep up. Welcome back to the Placeholder Podcast, everybody. I'm Kaylee Fretz. We got a great show for you today. Got a lot to talk about, actually. We have insight into Jumbo Visma's mystery bottles and the sort of purplish liquid that is being drank out of them. Jerome Pino thinks that Sepp Kuss has a motor. The NCL just laid off most of its riders, which is not great. And GCN, your favorite live television bike racing option, is for sale, we're hearing. We're going to talk about that later in the show. Welcome to class, Johnny Long.
Present.
Does that work?
Wait, that welcome is okay. Have you ever been in a school? That's not how the register's taken.
No. I thought the way I imagined it was like you literally do exactly what you did before, but Johnny or I or kid or whatever just says, here.
I public school all the way. I can sing the Pledge of Allegiance end to end. Do you guys have an equivalent of that in the UK? Do you have like
we don't do it in class?
Do we get stand up?
No, of course we don't, because we're normal.
To the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I can't talk because we did prayers because it was Catholic school, and that's all. That's the only thing weirder than doing the American stuff.
Oh yeah, we had chapel 4 times a week.
Yeah.
Welcome to the show, Johnny Long.
Present. Hello. Welcome.
Welcome to the show, Kit Nicholson.
Present.
And welcome to the show, Ronan McLaughlin.
Here.
We're going to get into it pretty quickly here today. But before we do, a quick thank you to some of our lifetime members. We love you very much. Big thanks to Dana Chen, Daniel Ford, Benoit C. Gauthier, Todd Markels, and Arjen Husabos. And I do apologize if I've mispronounced any of your names. Massive thank you for being lifetime members of Escape Collective. If you're not any sort of member of Escape Collective, head over to escapecollective.com/join. Members are how we fund this entire operation. So if you're a regular listener to this podcast or any of our other podcasts, you really should head over there. You can become a reader, which drops the paywall on the site for $6.99 US a month, or a full-on member with Discord access and all the rest for $11.99 US per month, or save 30% and be a yearly member. Head over to escapecollective.com/join right now. Please and thank you.
Kaylee, I know that you're going to say that all those lifers aren't your neighbors, but I know for sure that Benoit lives across the road on the right-hand side. And he definitely gets funny about his bins, and it's getting a bit tetchy down the street. That's my guess.
He forgot to close his bear-proof bin the other day, and it was knocked over, and trash was all over the street.
Nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
That's I like true. That you have bear-proof bins. In Edinburgh, we have gull-proof bags.
Really?
Yeah.
Seagull-proof
bin bags, massive sacks made of this hardy material. Yeah, there you go. Doesn't work either.
The bear-proof ones don't either, actually, most of the time. And there's a big bear that wanders down my alley every single night at about 2 o'clock in the morning. It's about, I don't know, sort of shoulders are about like adult human waist height. So
is he heading out or heading home at 2 in the morning?
I think he's heading home, and on his way back, he just knocks over every single trash bin in the entire
full
alley just to see if they'll open. And sometimes they do. Good start to the pod today. Let's get into today's episode.
It's the third
episode.
Week of a grand tour. That's
it's
why.
The third week of grand tour. We're going a little bit crazy. We're going to kick off with some really unfortunate news, but obviously bears mentioning. Nathan van Hooydonk was involved in a car accident on Tuesday. Johnny, what happened here? He's in pretty bad shape, right?
Yeah, it was 8:30 in the morning. He was driving his pregnant wife, who was in the passenger seat, and they were stopped at traffic lights on an intersection. And they believe at the moment, obviously by the time you're listening to this, you'll know a lot more about what happened, but apparently he sort of fell seriously ill. It might have been like a heart attack or something. And then his sort of foot then went on the accelerator, and then he just zoomed across the intersection and crashed into like five other cars. Other people in other cars were treated for minor injuries, like just scratches and scrapes for the most part. But Van Hooijdonk was resuscitated at the scene by a nurse and then taken to Antwerp Hospital. And it all sounds, who knows? It sounds really bad. There's a bit more encouraging news now, because while he is in an induced coma, they don't believe he suffered any brain damage. So it's still quite a critical condition. But the latest report that we're hearing at Tuesday at 4 p.m. is that the people in the hospital with him are more hopeful than they were previously. But yeah, very, very shocking and worrying story.
Yeah, really unfortunate. Well, we wish all the best to Nathan and his whole family, and hope everybody comes out of that all right. Again, we don't have a ton of information right now. We just wanted to mention it right up top. It always feels a bit weird to talk about something like that and dive straight back into bike racing, which, you know, just feels quite inconsequential after a story like that. But that is what we are here to talk about. So, brief update on the Vuelta. If you want a much deeper dive on the Vuelta, and for example, a much deeper dive on the question of can Sepkus actually take this thing all the way to the line, head over to the Pretty Serious Bike Racing Podcast. But let's get a little Vuelta update. Where do we stand right now with, half a week to go in the year's final Grand Tour?
Yeah, so not much has changed as far as the general classification. At the very top, it remains the Jumbo-Visma show, and that was never more apparent than on Friday's stage to the Col du Tourmalet, won by Jonas Vingegaard, and then second and third place was Sepkus and Primoz Roglic. So from that point onwards, they've been completely taking over the podium. What also happened on Friday, though, was that Remco Evenepoel dropped precipitously out of contention, and yet it has remained the Remco Evenepoel show this Vuelta, which has been, on Friday it was quite sad to see him drop so far out of contention, but he had bounced back with pretty sensational fashion over the weekend in what seemed to be a combination of proving himself to, well, the Belgian media, public, the fans, the race, his team, and I think even more than anything, himself. Stage win on Saturday, when he just rode everyone off his wheel after doing nearly all the work, and in the breakaway to sweep up some more KOM points on Sunday. So that's his new goal, is the King of the Mountains, with 1 week to go.
You wrote a great piece about Remco over the weekend, Kit. I really enjoyed it. And sort of the kind of the way that we look at athletes and in those sort of bad moments, and how we kind of project upon them and things like that. I think that Remco over the weekend was a really fascinating kind of case study in the way that fans react to, well, a very, very, very bad day on the bike, right? Taking himself completely out of overall contention, and then a bit of a redemption arc within about 48 hours. It was a fascinating weekend of bike racing, and a fascinating weekend for Remco. And I think that the initial reaction is to try to like take something out of it, right? It's like, okay, well, what do we learn from this? What do we, is Remco Evenepoel not actually a GC contender? Like those sort of questions start to pop up. And I thought your piece, in a very nuanced way, made a great point that like those sort of questions at this point in time are probably not the most helpful thing in the world, and also like a completely ridiculous sort of extrapolation off of actual events, right?
Yeah, I think as we so often have to remind ourselves, especially with Sepkus at the moment, is everyone's different, and some people will react differently to circumstances and to the rules, so-called, of modern cycling. You know, somebody doesn't do three Grand Tours back-to-back and win the third, if he does, obviously. But the same goes with Evenepoel, is there are all these expectations for him, especially looking ahead to the Tour de France next year, when he's expected to face off with Vingegaard and Pogacar. So, yeah, this seems like a big blow to that GC discussion. But there's the question mark over how bad his day was on Friday. Obviously, it was bad enough to be out of GC. There's no doubt about that. But was it? But what happened between being 4 minutes off the back and being 27 minutes off the back? That's a you'd have to dig deep into mental reserves there. And I think we've seen Evenepoel do that an awful lot. He always seems to learn something from it. He's someone who seems to have a very fast learning curve. And I think that's probably a good thing for his GC ambitions. I'm still, like I said in the piece, skeptical as to whether he's ready right now to be spoken about among those top riders on the, you know, in July. But I have more faith in his ability to make a plan and make it happen at some point in his career, because he keeps having these, he keeps proving to everyone that he actually does learn from the mistakes or the bad performances that he sometimes rarely puts out.
Yeah, we were kind of joking that Patrick Lefebvre should have sold him to Ineos before the Vuelta, because it probably didn't do a ton of favors for his sort of GC value, I would say. But that's sort of neither here nor there. But internally, actually, I heard recently that the latest from that camp is that Lefebvre is incredibly keen to hang on to him and is actually doing everything he possibly can to do so.
So you're saying that he tanked so Remco at the Vuelta?
He just, yeah, he didn't give him his little bottle of purple juice after the previous
no
stage.
Dinner.
And then what are they going to do? No dinner for him. Speaking of which, we have the answer to a question that came in from a listener. And actually, it's been sort of, we've been peppered with this question over the last couple of weeks, because, or even most of the season, because it's something that people keep noticing and that we have noticed, and we wanted to dig into and find an answer for it. And the question was, basically, these little kind of like translucent bottles, possibly transparent bottles, with some kind of purple liquid in them. What are they? And riders are often handed them after the finish. We've seen them like fall out of pockets, for example. Things that like 15 years ago would have set off many, many, many alarm bells. Even more recently than that, I would say, like up until the point where some of the finish bottle, like tramadol stuff, was effectively banned. You know, would have set off a lot of alarm bells. As it was, less alarm bells and more just kind of like, what is that? And we were very curious. Johnny, you have done a bit of digging on this, and well, the official answer is pretty innocuous, right?
Yeah, first of all, sorry, because I realized too late you were doing a perfect segue with the purple bottles into the story. But what's done is done, and we can't go back now, much like Remco Evenepoel's Vuelta. Anyway, Jumbo-Visma and their purple bottles. So we went to Jumbo-Visma and asked, we did some Googling on online, and we're like, what is this? And there were a couple of people suggesting cherry juice, and then we had our own sort of text thread going of like, is it cherry juice? What's going on? Here's the official line from the Jumbo-Visma nutritionist. I won't do a Dutch accent, but you can imagine it in Dutch accent if you want. Cherry juice contains, first of all, a decent amount of carbohydrates that are the most important priority in acute recovery after a hard stage. Next to that, the cherries we are using are rich in a specific nutrient, a certain polyphenol, which is like a micronutrient I googled, that are like present in loads of fruit and veg and other things. That helps to reduce / recover muscle damage. Finally, just because it's half a litre of fluids, it helps to replenish sweat loss, which is also a very important step in recovery. I'm watching Ronan's face while this has been read out, and I'm ready to be hit in the face with the analysis and be told that I've been half lied to.
I think we should clarify, first of all, I think that answer refers specifically to the bottles that the riders are getting after the finish line handed to them from their soigneur. So we don't actually have an answer on the bottles that we see in riders' pockets and stuff from time to time. But I don't think that was the initial question. I mean, that was just as I started rambling and getting loads of stuff off my chest, we ended up talking about random bottles and back pockets. But anyway, that remains a mystery. And the cherry juice is something that a handful of people had messaged me on Instagram and stuff after last week's podcast to say that the riders are taking cherry juice. And it kind of, when someone first suggested that, it was one of those to me, oh, right, okay, well, why now? Because I know Cherry Active Juice and stuff like that was like something writers, myself included, were taking like 10 years ago to aid sleep, I think. And I wasn't really aware of its recovery powers, but then Kit, you had some understanding of the benefits in terms of recovery that the cherry juice offers. And when I went back then to try and find whatever research I had seen 10 years ago about how to aid sleep, I had uncovered quite a lot of stuff about improving endurance performance and different studies suggesting that it aids recovery also. Unfortunately, some of those studies were funded by the manufacturers who are producing this stuff, so
questionable.
Take those with an ounce of cherry or salt, either way. Yeah, Kit, you know a bit more about this, so I'm going to throw it across to you.
Yeah, I mean, the sleep element is an interesting one, because I think there's a bit of doubt as to, well, the sleep and it being lumped together with the performance enhancing properties, potential. You know, we talked about beets and various other fruits that are supposed to have some sort of, I don't know, benefit throughout the ride, throughout the day, that sort of thing. As far as cherries and sleep is concerned, there's an understanding that that does, especially tart cherry juice, because it's got more melatonin than the more sweet cherries. It is, you know, melatonin is something that we all have heard of, right? It helps you get sleep. And then, of course, if you have more sleep efficiency, you have more energy. So your performance is probably going to be better. But it's not directly because of the cherries. Now, as far as recovery, it's a inflammation and a muscle strain thing. I read a study, I was refreshing my memory on the inflammation subject, because I've been told over the years that it's got these properties that are better than things like, I don't know, spinach and tomatoes. It's got these higher levels, a higher concentration of various antioxidants. Essentially, supposedly, and this wasn't a brand-funded article or research project, but apparently tart cherries specifically, sour cherries, over the course of a few months of having them in your diet can reduce biological markers for inflammation by 25%, which is pretty significant. So if that's, you know, if you're doing, and so it's especially in older people, it's used quite often, it's advised quite often with arthritis, and you can get cherry supplements in tablet form now. But yeah, so it's, I think what they're doing is they are getting off the bike, especially on a really hard day, they're reducing muscle strain as much as they possibly can. And also over a long period of time, they're getting their bodies used to lower levels of inflammation or lowering inflammation. As for the question of why they drink it so damn fast, if it's sour cherries, I used to drink a lot of sour cherry juice. It's quite sour. You don't want to add sugar, because sugar, well, it's also got its own carbohydrate properties, and it does good in other ways. But if you want everything you can get out of sour cherries, you get it down you because it doesn't taste great. And then you move on to the, I don't know, the cookies and cream recovery shake. I don't know. I think that's a bit of a ramble, but it's also something that's tricky to really pinpoint. What is it, the cherries or is it something else? But that's 25% is the number it supposedly gets to.
I mean, them drinking it so quickly is why it's become like a story, even if it's like an old explanation of what it is. And it's also because it's in those weird, well, not weird, completely normal plastic bottles, but that in context of a bike race are weird. And so we asked that as well of the team, of why they're just drinking out of like they've picked out of like a rubbish bin. And the answer is it's partly water, like already in the mixture, which is already in the water bottles. So I guess like the Soigneurs are just like down in half of the bottle, and they don't want to waste extra bidons. And on a bike, you need those bottles. But normally after a finish line, you don't need those sorts of bottles anymore.
Well, if it's the same sort of thing that, you know, if you think about any sort of squash, concentrated squash, you really don't need very much. I think something like 10 milliliters of concentrated cherry juice. So I imagine that they're literally just, you know, cracking the seal on the bottle, pouring in the sachet, shaking it up, and they're done. So when I saw that, I thought, well, that's hilariously obvious. And as cycling journalists, we have expected it to be so much bigger than it actually is. Literally, it's just water in a bottle of water that we've added something to.
And cycling teams are notoriously famous for saving bidons wherever possible. Also, like you would never see a team throwing away a bidon to get to your point.
Yeah, exactly, right? About
them. No, that part of the explanation was like, it was that part that had me questioning all the rest of the explanation.
Yeah, for ease, I don't know, yeah. But yeah, the final, I guess, and it adds, Dan Martin was talking the other day about Jumbo Visma's dominance and that sort of thing. And someone asked him, like, oh, are you not suspicious, da da da? And he's like, no, like, I want to trust and believe, but they definitely do have, like, a couple of little tricks that other people haven't cottoned onto, which I guess makes sense. And maybe this isn't going to be the answer, but, like, you don't see other teams drinking out of these water bottles like this.
I was going to say the opposite, actually. I thought it was just, when we were talking about it last week, I was sort of talking world tour wide rather than specifically about Jumbo Visma.
They just win a lot, Johnny, so we see them drinking it more than anybody
else.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Oh, that's the reason. Maybe Arkea Samsic are also doing the same thing, but they're just not got the cameras on them after the stage.
All right, so we've solved one mystery. Other mysteries remain, of course, as is always the case. But this one seems relatively, like I said, relatively innocuous. I don't think there's any real reason to not believe them. and as you said, Ren, it's across a lot of the world tour. So,
yeah, I think it's just refreshing that the answer is literally just, it's in your fruit bowl, guys. It's really simple. We're just eating food and it works. It saves our energy.
I think it would probably differ greatly as well from what they do in training. If they're looking for an anti-inflammatory response, that would obviously be desirable during a stage race when you want to recover as quickly as possible. But that's less desirable in training because some studies have shown that anti-inflammatories can actually hamper your training response or your training stimulus. So it's, you know, it's obviously they do it in a race at the finish line. It's very obvious to us, but I first of all doubt they're doing it in training, and I doubt they think it's all that big a secret, because if they did,
they would probably
do it on the team bus where it wouldn't be visible. I don't think the difference between the finish line and 5 minutes later in privacy somewhere would be make or break in terms of whether this works or not.
I'd like if they threw like a big sheet over their heads and then they downed the bottle and then whipped it off again. Like a Scooby-Doo type incident.
Just bring a big screen.
Yeah, or like those old-fashioned cameras where you have to like duck under to like see for the darkness. Yeah, that'd be cool.
Well, speaking of superb conspiracy theories that we really love to engage with, Jerome Pino, the former team manager, was on French radio, was it, over the weekend, I believe, and made some somewhat inflammatory remarks about Jumbo-Visma and this old ringer here, motors in their bicycles. So what did he say, first and foremost? And then we could chat about it.
He was on a show, someone commented on the spin cycle, we were chatting about it, and the show is called something like People with Big Mouths, so it's kind of like a shock jock sort of, like the British listeners will understand, it's like the French Talk Sport from what it sounds like. I don't know what your guys' equivalent is, like a sporting Alex Jones for American listeners. Anyway, he was basically talking about Jumbo-Visma's dominance, and in so many words, even though he wouldn't actually come out and say it, which kind of, if you're going to say it, that Jumbo-Visma had like motors because they, in 4 pedal strokes, they would go 10 meters more and all this stuff. And then making like weird analogies to like the opening stage of Paris-Nice last year. But instead of saying that, he said like it was to the west of a certain region of France and like an 800 meter climb. It took me ages to figure out. By the end, I was like, you know what, Jerome Pino, like enough. All right. But yeah, just quite strong, and you don't really get this sort of talk from anyone like within the cycling world, or at least anyone who maybe he's just given up on like having a job within cycling again. I don't know, after the whole Men in Glass fiasco with the Mark Cavendish project and the women's team. But yeah, basically accused Sepp Kuss and the whole, all of them of using motors. It was pretty wild.
Maybe this explains the whole team failing last winter, and you know, perhaps
the fact that
Cavendish had just told him he was going to sign for a team east of Britain and
yeah, we'd
jumped to conclusions, and yeah,
we'd assumed all the like the men in. Do you remember when they used to do like the men in Glas, like on the website, like the description of the color of the sea and stuff? And we assumed it was just some like half cut like marketing officer, but it was actually just Jerome Pinot, like after a few glasses, just going off on one. But yeah, what a nuts guy. He was not on the shortlist of the guys you think would accuse. Like, I think he probably beat like Antoine Weyer to the punch with this one, which is really saying something.
And Richard Plugger's response, so that's the Jumbo-Visma boss. Mm. He said something along the lines of, Jerome Pino hasn't got any right to talk about modern cycling. He doesn't have a clue, or something like that. So after the fiasco there was last autumn, it was quite salty, but it was good.
All right, so a big important question I want to ask all three of you. Is Sepp Kuss riding with a motor in his bicycle? What do we think?
I don't think I'm not willing to comment well on whether or not he has a motorbike at home. But,
or an e-bike, for that matter.
I just don't know. Yeah, or yeah. An e-bike. But obviously none of us actually know the answer to this. I think it's highly unlikely. I was going to say, unfortunately, it is our job to like actually at least look into these things. And the videos that I have seen circulating as evidence that he has a motor in it, there's just nothing abnormal looking about those.
It looks like an attack on a mountain.
It looks like an attack where the group isn't going full gas. He's at the back. Mass has dropped back a bit. And he attacks from behind the group that doesn't see him attacking. And he then gets a jump on them. And Ayuso's in the front of the group. And he actually does respond to Kuss's attack. And he is able to accelerate also. But Kuss has such a jump on him that Ayuso's attack just can't match Kuss's. I also think, Pino had mentioned about the spectator stepping out in front of him, I think had Kuss had a motor in his bike at that point, he wouldn't have been able to slow down, or it would have back kicked, or something would have, surely he wouldn't have been able to avoid a crash in that scenario then. So, I don't know.
I hate this topic. I'm sorry. Like, yeah. It pops up a couple times a year. It's generally some like sort of strange semi-ostracized individual like Jerome Pino. And the problem is there's been one, right? We've got the Femke Vandendriessche issue. Where they found an actual motor in a cyclocross racer's bike a couple years ago, right? So there's been one, and that's the sort of thing that keeps these things chugging along. I tend to believe that, like, you can rationalize doping as yourself, but better. You can't rationalize a motor, right? And I think you'd have to be pretty kind of sociopathic to go down that particular route.
It's not just that you need to be sociopathic. You need multiple sociopaths on the team to
yeah.
make it happen.
Yeah.
And sociopaths within the bike brand, and the sociopath who's developed the motor, and yeah.
Like, it's just the whole thing, it's very implausible. And also, yeah, there's just no evidence. So anyway, well, let's leave this aside. We thought it was silly and worth mentioning, and mostly because we wanted to tell you that Jerome Pino is being kind of an idiot here.
Also, you wouldn't have had Grisha Neerman calling Wout van Aert a motorbike for the whole Tour de France, because you just wouldn't do that. You wouldn't be that obvious. Or maybe you would, and then...
What if the bike doesn't just have a motor in it, but also has like some sort of AA and a radio on it, and he wasn't talking to van Aert, he was talking to the bike.
Alexa, go faster.
This is the 4D chess that Yumbo are playing at this point in time, and the rest of us just cannot keep up. Speaking of 4D chess, just right now, while we were making this podcast, and again, it's Tuesday, September 12th, Stages of Wealth just finished up. We think this is worth mentioning because it's relevant. Jonas Vingegaard just attacked his teammate, Zepkus, and took a whole bunch more time out of him. It did look like a Van Hooydonk tribute of some sort. Vingegaard was quite emotional at the finish. But still, I feel like I can't be the one to say it here as the American in the room.
I'll say it.
Yeah, you say it, Johnny.
Look, this is obviously a Zepkus podcast, and sometimes we've been critical of Jumbo-Visma for various things, but like, we don't have anything against them. But attacking your teammate in the red jersey after you've won two Tours de France in a row, and the guy in the red jersey was crucial in winning you them, can you not let him have a Vuelta? Like, the Vuelta is for, like, in the past, Primoz Roglic, who lost the Tour, so you win the Vuelta. But, and I know people be like, oh, well, you know, they have to be competitors and there are no gifts and da da da. But in cycling, sometimes there are gifts. And if you're in the team together, like when Wout van Aert's given Laporte pretty sizable victories, you can let Zepkus have one Vuelta.
The strange thing though was, and it could be an act, it wouldn't need to be if there actually was a problem, like you're sort of suggesting there, Johnny, with them attacking Sepp, but Sepp just looks delighted for Jonas still, that, you know, they're hugging and celebrating and smiling and laughing, and
are they that in control that they can put Vingegaard within 30 seconds and then leave tomorrow. Him there?
Or either that, or the Angliru is so tough that they know Vingegaard is going to ride away with it anyway.
But he doesn't have to.
It's good for.
I know he doesn't have to, but I mean,
like Froome didn't beat Wiggins. I mean, he tried to, kind of. Sorry, Kit.
No, but Froome was pulled back in that 2012 tour.
Yeah, like I think that's very different. There was a direct order from the team. You wait.
Because... Why are they not ordering Vingegaard? Like,
yeah, I mean, there are a couple of things to. I don't disagree that it was weird that he's, especially he's taking what I think is about a minute 16 back, which means he's got.
He's got a 29-second gap now.
That's a sizable margin. And yes, he doesn't need to attack to soften up anybody else because they've got the red jersey in the team. But, you know, there were, for once, actually quite a lot of responses today. So to try and soften up their competitors for tomorrow, maybe they've got a plan to put Zepkus way out ahead tomorrow, because I think the Angliru is a sort of stage that he would excel on. Right, that sort of high altitude climb, he is an altitude guy, so maybe they're making us ask these questions and making us ask, is Zepkus off, making the other teams ask, is Zepkus off. It was also, I think, inevitable that Jumbo-Visma, if the guys felt like they could, they were going to try and do something today for their teammate in Belgium, so I don't disagree that it's the way that it was done. You know, he could have, or Roglic could have gone for it in the last kilometre. We know that Roglic has got a punch. So they could have won the stage in a different manner. But it's, and there's a lot to unpick, and it doesn't necessarily mean that, oh, suddenly Vingegaard is the one.
Well, the thing is, by the time you listen to this, you probably know.
That's also true.
which we don't, of course. So I don't want to spend too much time on it, but we were just sort of reacting to that in real time because it was happening.
At which point it will also be boring once we know the end. This is most exciting right now.
Unless Kit's got it
spot on. Most intriguing right now.
We're gonna move on. I'm gonna choose to assume that Jumbo-Visma is just in such control that they were like, all right, we'll give Vingegaard a bit more gap between him and Ayuso or whoever it is, just to make sure if anything weird happens on the Angliru that we're fine. But man, if he ends up taking red off his own teammate who's worked his butt off for him in multiple Tours de France on like the final day that is possible to do it, that is basically all of America is going to hate Jumbo-Visma forever. If they didn't already. Not that maybe they don't care. Jumbo doesn't sell groceries in America, so I don't know.
Well, Jumbo doesn't won't be on the team jersey next year either.
Oh yeah,
but they must know that as well. Though surely they know that Seb Kuss has got to be the winner if he can. Surely, but anyway,
I'm hoping this is the start of the butterfly effect that leads Seb Kuss to not renew after next season. Then he joins UAE Team Emirates and helps Pogacar finally beat Vingegaard at the Tour.
That'd be sweet.
Silence.
I don't think he will. No. I think if it was anybody else, they would be like incredibly pissed off. But I think Sepp will probably just sort of.
Why not? I want him to be angry.
Keep going. He's not an angry man. He's just not an angry man. Yeah. Anyway, we already spent too much time in this because by the time you listen, you will have much more information than we actually have. We have a lot more to talk about today.
Oh yeah, we do.
We are going to take a quick break. Okay, we are back with another reader, listener question. You can't read a podcast. We had a bunch of question about the. This is a great question. I love this about the Garmin watches that are, we think, given to riders for the podium, right? And they always have the same thing on them. First of all, what was the question, and what's the answer?
The question came in on the Discord from Solomon. You can access the Discord if you remember. He asked. I'll start reading it out until we get the gist of it. Solomon writes, my question is, are all the riders on Garmin-sponsored teams using the exact same fake watch when they are on the hot seat or go into the podium? I noticed at the tour that Jonas Vingegaard, when he's not dropping his teammate in the red jersey, always had a white 4Runner 955, but the bizarre thing is that it's always set on the solar intensity page, and there's always a nice, pretty graphic, despite the fact that none of them wear it while racing. The cynic in me thinks it's just a show model that gets passed around, but even so, I wonder if they only have it for Grand Tours or if there are a bunch of them just floating around. That's the gist of it. Ronan, you had some immediate thoughts that we then followed up and actually asked the teams about.
Yeah, you messaged me asking me this question while I was cutting the grass.
Yeah.
The grass.
Fun fact about Ronan's grass cutting is that when he sent me a picture of it, it was almost like a football pitch. He had like really straight sort of lines on it. Like as fastidious as he is with his saddle height and his bike maintenance, the same goes for his lawn.
So I sent you back. I had seen the teams recently, or the riders on the podium recently, wearing these multi-sport watches, either from Garmin or Wahoo or from whoever. And I'd sort of seen that as a growing trend. I'd noticed it happened a few times where it didn't previously happen. You know, Garmin have been making watches for as long as they've been making head units, I think. And the riders didn't used to wear watches on the podium, but they have done of late. And I guess it makes sense. Like, it's another way to get another sponsor onto the podium. It's probably something copied from Formula One as well. The difference with Formula One is that they're wearing 500,000 euro watches and not multi-sport watches. But anyway, and I didn't know any more than that, but when you asked this question, I thought of the way those watches and head units are delivered with like a screen protector that has a display printed on it. And I presume that much like the Swanier on the finish line will have fresh team clothing, a team cap,
cherry juice,
everything a rider needs before they go to the podium. They probably also now stuff one of these watches into the podium bag, which will be, you know, the same bag for every rider going to the podium. And because it's not a watch that's actually used, it's only for podium duties, it probably just has never had that sticker removed. I would say partially just because it never needed to come off, and partially because actually maybe Garmin or Wahoo or whatever want it left on because it shows a display. But I would say that's why it's always in the same screen, because it's not actually on a screen. It's a screen protector sticker thing that is also a display of what you will see on the screen.
Yeah, that's pretty much what the teams, well, the people we spoke to told us, that it's just part of the podium bag, and they keep it on, with the sticker, and they said some of their guys rather than them occasionally. I didn't pay that much attention. But what Solomon also asked was, he noticed that Primoz Roglic doesn't wear the Garmin and doesn't know, and like he's like, what's up with that? Does he have his own deal? Don't know. I would presume that he did so much heavy lifting with the Morton's video sponsorship thing earlier in the season that was his get out of jail card to not have to wear the fake watch on the podium.
It's most likely because I think we just cracked this answer as well. You're two for the price of one here on today's podcast. It seems like Primus Roglic is a TISO ambassador. Because when I've Googled him on the podium, he is on the podium at this year's Giro, pink jersey and the never-ending trophy in his hand, so must be the final podium, with the Jumbo-Visma hat, Oakley glasses, and a TISO watch. So
there we go.
That tells me he probably doesn't wear the Garmin watch. I would love to see the team just force him to put a Garmin watch on the other wrist.
Double watch.
Roglic's TISO watch is Peter Sagan's ski goggles.
Yeah. I like the ski goggles. That was a good vibe. All right. Let's call us Scooby-Doo. We're solving mysteries left and right, like I said. If you would like, if you have a mystery you would like us to answer, or at least attempt to, one, you can hit us on Discord if you are a member. And just for clarity's sake here, so we have sort of two tiers of membership, right? We have the reader tier and the member tier.
Yeah, readers can read about mysteries and listen to them guilt-free, but members can pose mysteries to be solved.
Exactly. So you have to be a member tier to get access to our private Discord. So if you are a member and not just a reader and not just a nothing at all, you can hit us up on Discord with your mysteries to be solved. You can also send us an email, johnny.long@escapecollective.com. That's J-O-N-N-Y, no H. Although I think we decided we're going to set up a version of the email with an H in it and just forward because we think a lot of emails are going there. Anyway, email us your mystery. And again, if you're going to email us, you got to include your member number because that's how we know that you're a member. And we do check. So if you've got a mystery for us, pop it on over. We're going to take another quick break.
Hey there. I'm Dane Cash. You may have seen my byline over at escapecollective.com. And I'm also a podcast host, and I'm taking the opportunity provided by this little break in the action of the podcast you're listening to right now to tell you that if you like bike racing and you want some pretty serious analysis, you should check out the Pretty Serious Bike Racing Podcast. Every week, I chat with my co-host Cosmo Catalano and a few other extremely talented analysts, and we break down all the big stories in the pro racing scene. You hear from former road pros like Abby Mickey, Ruth Winder, and Ronan McLaughlin, and from insightful cycling journalists like Kaylee Fretz, Johnny Long, and Kit Nicholson. We try to dive deep into the racing action to talk tactics, smart moves by some riders, questionable decisions by others, unheralded members of the pro peloton, and a lot more. And despite my best efforts to keep us very serious, you can rely on Cosmo and the rest of our crew to keep the serious level down just to where it's just pretty serious, the perfect amount of serious. You can find the pod on the main Escape Collective podcast feed, and we hope you'll check it out. All right, back to the show.
Welcome back, everybody. We're gonna open up with some great news here. While we were recording, it sounds like Nathan Van Hooydonk woke up. He is awake. So if you missed that on the Vuelta coverage on Tuesday, yeah, he's doing better, which is what we like to hear. We've got a couple more news items today that we want to chat through.
Before we get into that, just as you're saying that, it's kind of just, I'd already thought about it earlier today, but just thinking about whatever about the team, if you're a fan of them or not, but for those riders who are human at the end of the day, having to line up and race the stage of the Vuelta today, not knowing what condition Van Hooydonk was in, like, he's a guy who would have spent 3 weeks on the road in France with a lot of these guys as recently as just over a month ago. For Tour Britain team, you know, I don't think any of them were racing today, but obviously they spent all of last week with him. Yeah, that's
rough.
Yeah. So whatever about dropping red jerseys, winning stages, whatever it kind of, yeah.
Again, perspective. It puts things in perspective in this sort of, just the inconsequential nature of a lot of what we talk about on this podcast, which is something that we struggle with on occasion. And actually, I would say we struggle with quite frequently. But at the end of the day, we enjoy being your ear friends over here and talking a bit of nonsense and talking important things when we need to. So that's what we'll continue to do. We've got a couple more news stories today. Two bits of news. Actually, we broke both these stories this week. One, we're going to start with the NCL. We'll keep this one quite short. The NCL, which is the National Cycling League, is this sort of like big money. Well, maybe not quite so big money. Big Money Crit League was basically the idea behind it, launched this year. They were supposed to have four races, ended up having three. Sort of this franchise team model. You all know what this is, I think, at this point. Anyway, they, on Monday night, they, in a mass video, laid off approximately 20 of their 32 riders across two teams. So they have two teams, the Miami Knights and the Denver Disruptors. They laid off 20 of those riders. Those riders are essentially, contract terminated without pay. NCL did pay sort of decently well by kind of domestic racing standards. And now we've got 20 riders completely out of a job. And unfortunately, halfway through the kind of transfer season that happens in cycling, and a lot of teams are locking up their rosters. And now we've got 20 riders who are, potentially unable to find new work, which is really, really unfortunate. Not a whole lot to sort of unpack here other than this project had, a lot of promise born in the finances of it. Basically, they were talking about $1 million prize purse and really sort of like huge celebrities behind it. Kevin Durant just put money in like a month ago. And this is a somewhat sort of unceremonious end to the season for them. I should say that they have just announced that they're going to create some new team for 2024. They're spinning it a little bit. But there's no question that laying off 20 of your riders right as the season is sort of about to end, who are expecting to be paid to the end of the year, is not a good sign for the future of this organization. Again, I don't want to spend too much time on this particular topic. It's really unfortunate for all the riders. These are some of them are sort of near the end of their career, but a lot of them aren't. Like a lot of them were sort of up and coming. Some of the good news, like Riley Sheehan, for example, was riding. I think he was riding for Denver and just signed with Israel, which is great. Like so it has been occasionally been a success story from a kind of development standpoint. And again, I don't want to root against people trying to do things in particularly, sort of American bike racing that needs a bit of help. But
just don't be a dick. That's
just a good sign. Just don't be a dick about it. And I'm going to leave it at that, I think. We have one other kind of interesting news bit for this week. And this has been a rumor that's been floating around for some time, but we got some sort of firmer information on it again on around Monday, published a story on it on Tuesday. So it's up by the time you're listening to this podcast. And it's relevant because I think a lot of us consume a heck of a lot of bike racing television via the Global Cycling Network, or GCN Plus, the app, the GCN Plus app, right? GCN is owned by a company called Play Sports Network, which also owns GMBN, the mountain bike side, and the triathlon one, and various other languages. They have like GCN Spanish and stuff like that. All part of Play Sports Network, which is owned by Warner Discovery, the massive, massive, massive media conglomerate that includes like Discovery Channel and they bought Eurosport and all the rest. Play Sports Network is, according to our sources, for sale, which is particularly interesting because one of the big questions that is not yet answered for me is whether that sale would potentially include the TV rights that GCN currently utilizes to bring us all this live coverage. The TV rights, of course, are owned by Discovery, not owned by Play Sports Network. And so if Play Sports Network gets spun off and gets sold to somebody, then where do those TV rights go? Do they go back to Eurosport? Do we watch bike racing on Discovery Plus? Like, what does that end up looking like? So for I think sort of the broader audience out there, it's an interesting and maybe somewhat concerning question, because I do genuinely think that GCN is they do the best English language race sort of television race coverage on the planet right now. They're certainly doing a better job than Flow Sports. They're, I would say, doing a better job than NBC here in the States. They do a good job. So that's concerning. The other interesting side of this is that the two of a couple, we think there are a number of buyers essentially sort of floating around, potential buyers sort of floating around this at the moment. One is Simon Ware, the original founder of GCN back in 2012. Simon sold the last bits of the company in 2021 to Discovery, valuing the whole thing at about 70 million British pounds. So he's apparently, according to our sources, poking around a little bit. I know Simon quite well, and I texted him and have not received a response as of yet. The other one, and this is fun, particularly for our listenership, is Outside. The company that, everybody currently on this podcast at one time worked for. I have also messaged Robin Thurston, the CEO of Outside, and also not gotten a response. So no confirmation there. But according to our sources, Outside has actually made a bid for the Play Sports Network. So there we have it. GCN, the sort of hangs in the balance a little bit. I would say companies like this are often sort of like floated around sort of half for sale, but it does sound like this is a relatively serious endeavor. And born of, frankly, like losing a whole bunch of money in the last couple of years. We were the UK. You guys have like ridiculously transparent finances for companies, which
it's really good there's a societal benefit to just not having weird money floating around in places.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, I was sort of looking up Play Sports Network and how they've been doing. They lost. 5 million and then 7 million. I think that was in 2020.
Oh, were you on Company's House?
Yes, I was.
Yeah. Great time there.
Which is a fun place to hang out. Mm. Good times. So anyway, we do know that Play Sports Network, and again, it's kind of hard to like parse which bits of this company were, because it's all part of this giant conglomerate, right? But it does appear that it hasn't been particularly profitable in recent years and that Discovery is looking to move it on.
It's tough to see how they're going to separate it out, because like we've got colleagues and friends who have recently been employed on the website side of things, like Dan Benson, Matilda Price, Patrick Fletcher. I guess that makes sense with GCN trying to build out that sort of digital offering a bit more if they know that maybe they're not going to have those rights. But it's kind of, in the past few years, it's kind of become synonymous with the whole thing, is that that's where you watch your bike racing. Having it on your phone in that app is just a game changer. Instead of having to sit, like in the UK, you basically have to sit through loads of adverts for, if you don't have the app, for like donkey sanctuaries or like pension funds. And it's just like the most depressing thing in the world. So it'd be a big loss. Like sometimes I find the whole thing a bit much. I think some other people do, but there's no doubt that they're like a really big part of the ecosystem and the culture. And a lot of people really like the brand. So hopefully everything works out for those people and not the money men.
It's often happened that source of the ability to watch bike racing. For anybody who has come to bike racing in the past 3 or 4 years, you might not be aware that 5 years ago the GCN Plus race coverage didn't exist, and things like the Tour de Wallonie today, you might have seen on Eurosport, but you might not. And certainly things like, you know, GP for me's over the weekend or whatever it might be, the countless other races that are not at World Tour level, or even some of the World Tour races that aren't at Grand Tour or Monuments level, that we now can sit down and watch if we so choose. Removing that option, it's probably one of those things we don't realize what we have until it's gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think train coming by.
You have trains where you are?
Yeah, what? Yeah, we have a narrow gauge steam train.
What? What's the steam train do? What, for tourists?
It's for tourists. It's for tourists. It's a coal powered you know, spews. Anyway,
we have aeroplanes here, Johnny. They're like trains, but they go in the sky.
Sorry, I do have a point. I think you're 100% right, Ronan. I think if this goes away, we're going to sort of realize what we have lost. I would argue that GCN Plus, so I'm not talking about the YouTube channel, which is where all this started, right? It started as a YouTube channel funded actually by YouTube and Google in its very, very, very early days when Simon Ware first founded it, with people like Simon Richardson and Dan Lloyd and Matt Stevens. Those are sort of the original crew, right? And some of them are still around. I'm talking about the modern version where it's become where we watch all of our live racing, and we watch these, you know, you can watch all the small races, you can watch the big races. They do genuinely a very good job of sort of the show before and after. They, you know, I think GCN at this point has probably done more to grow sort of the sport of professional road racing in English language markets than anything else in the last half decade, probably anything else in quite some time, because it's just so much easier to watch, right? It's just so much easier to go watch all the races you want to go watch. And we recommend all the time, like, forget Flow Sports, forget NBC, go get yourself a VPN and watch GCN, because you're going to have access to everything you could possibly want to have access to. And they just do a much better job. So I think that's why this is an important story for us to keep an eye on, because it is very relevant to everybody out there who watches a lot of bike racing. And it is kind of concerning for me that we would potentially lose access to some of that, that incredible live coverage that we've kind of come to expect over the last couple of years. I mean, you don't have to go that far, you don't have to go back that far in the US to get to, like, you get 1 hour of Tour de France coverage once a week on Sunday, you know, like that. We could end up back there at some point if NBC decides it doesn't want to do this anymore and GCN is split off, and, you know, we could be in a bit of a heyday for live coverage that we don't really know about.
And I think that's, you know, if I'm honest with myself as well, I think as good as GCN has been over the last couple of years, the question has always been lingering there in the back of my mind is, like, how is it this good for this sport? You know, it's not a huge sport. Hearing about the losses GCN were suffering there is a bit worrying also, but it kind of all feels a bit like the British continental racing scene of the past decade or so. It's like at a certain point there was riders turning down pro contracts with, you know, pro continental or World Tour teams because they were getting paid more with the continental level teams in Britain, and that just was not a model that could be sustainable. And I was a long time saying this is all going to go bang at some point, and I think I got to the point where I was starting to think, well, maybe I was wrong, maybe this is sustainable, but as we see now, unfortunately, it was not sustainable. And hopefully that's not the case with us. Hopefully GCN's package here is sustainable, because as you said, Kelly, what they've done for English language, you know, no matter what else happens in the world of cycling, if there is not somewhere that you can go and watch races on an almost daily basis, it doesn't matter if the coverage isn't there. You know, that comes back to what we do as well. If the coverage isn't there, you know, does a tree falling in the woods make a noise if nobody's there to hear it? that right. kind of thing. So
exactly. Well, we'll keep you apprised of anything else we hear on this. Again, the you know, sources indicate it's pretty early stages, and there's a couple potential buyers kind of floating around. Again, we've got potentially the original founder, Simon. Our sources indicate that they are, you know, they're seriously, the sale is sort of very likely to go forward at some point. We just don't know exactly where it's going to end up and what the exact details are. And again, the details are the key here. And if I was a betting man, I would guess that those TV rights stay with Discovery. And so Play Sports Network is basically what's being sold is the YouTube channel and the new website that they launched quite recently under our friend and former colleague Dan Benson, who's doing a phenomenal job over there. That's my guess. But that is, at the moment, mostly a guess. We are not going to do a weekly pain today. The standings remain. It's the international break.
Last week was painful.
Nice. Too much news.
Too much news. International break. We're holding off. Just to remind everybody, the current standings: Kit is in the lead with 5 points. Dane and Johnny tied on 4. Ian on 1. Ronan still at 0. Sad for
you. I want to recount.
Sad for you.
Dane's going to Jonas Vingegaard you, Kit. He's just going to steamroll right over the top and take the top spot. I'm going to be Roglic. I'm going to be peacefully waiting. Happy with the podium.
Speaking of that, Dane actually just posted something from the Jumbo-Visma team. We should maybe finish on this note. A quote from Jonas Vingegaard from today's stage after we just sort of ripped him for being mean to our little Sep. He did say, "I wanted to win for my best friend, Nathan. This victory is for him." So I think that given that context, we can somewhat allow for the chasing of a stage win today. I think that is a noble pursuit, perhaps. But I still think that if they end up taking this one away from Sepp on the Angleroo, that there's going to be some unhappy fans out there. And with that, we're going to wrap up. Thanks for listening to today's episode. Head over to escapecollective.com/join if you are not already a member or a reader. Remember, you got to be a member to jump into our private Discord, present some mysteries for us, or email Johnny with your philosophical questions, your internal debates, anything, whatever you want to send. All right. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Today's correct answers are Mikel Landa, Michelle Reese, Larry Warbus, Luis Leon Sanchez, and Damiana Caruso.